Welcome to tonight's program, which is first hour of which is being sponsored by Llewellyn Swinehart. She has a message. Hi, Mike. Thanks for everything you do as a truth seeker. I dedicate this sponsorship to the lost vision of who I thought Barack Obama was. Sadly, Llewellyn writes, that person never existed. One example being he never offered any real support for the union people in Wisconsin. He wants to be reelected. Reelected won't happen because the real Obama won't stand up for anything. Llewellyn in California. Thanks, Llewellyn. Now, as far as you still have that little bit of sound of Obama when he was on the campaign trail, when he since Llewellyn brought it up, if you've got that handy. We'll play it in a minute. Okay. Six Libyan villagers are recovering in hospital after being shot by American soldiers who came to the rescue of that those U.S. pilots whose plane crash landed in a field. I guess you heard about the crash landing. It was not shot down. It was just mechanical failure. A helicopter that was flying a support to pick up these pilots strafed the ground as it landed in a field outside Benghazi near the downed U.S. Air Force F-15, which ran into trouble during a bombing raid last night. And a handful of locals who had come out to greet the pilots were hit. Among them, a young boy who may have to have a leg amputated because of injuries caused by the bullet wound. This is reported in the Daily Mail, and the UK's Britain's Channel 4's international editor confirmed the civilian casualties. The crew of the fighter had enjoyed a miraculous escape as they were running airstrikes on Gaddafi's military positions. One of the local people told the newspaper, the Daily Mail, quote, I hugged him, the pilot, and said, don't be scared. We are your friends. We are so grateful to these men who are protecting the skies, end quote. So the helicopter comes in and they open fire. Six people, nobody killed, nobody died yet. Six people in the hospital, but a boy who will have a leg amputated because he happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, I guess. Right? It was a mistake. No problem. TinyRevolution.com. We have a piece up, the lesson the U.S. is teaching the world where it concerns Libya. And it says, in all the discussion about the current U.S. bombing of Libya, something important has gone almost unnoticed. The lesson the United States is teaching the government of every country on earth, the lesson is this. No matter what, no matter the inducements or pressure, never, foreign country, give up chemical weapons or a nuclear weapons program. Don't do it. Don't give it up. Because doing so will not ensure that the U.S. does not attack you. On the contrary, it will make it much more likely. Now, the U.S. already delivered that lesson very powerfully 8 years ago by attacking Iraq, a country which had no biological, no chemical, no nuclear weapons program. after 1991, 12 years earlier. Moreover, according to the CIA's 2004 Weapons of Mass Destruction report, Saddam Hussein had begged the Clinton administration for better relations, promising it would be Washington's, quote, best friend in the region, bar none, end quote. In fact, Iraq said that if it had a security relationship with the U.S., it would be inclined to permanently discard even the ambition for weapons of mass destruction. All this, of course, is the kind of stuff that you read in WikiLeaks, stuff that goes on behind the scenes that we don't know about and we're not supposed to know about, and Bradley Manning can be charged with a capital offense for revealing, if in fact he did. Saddam Hussein begged the Clinton administration. Just cut us some slack. I'm a good dictator. I know the United States works with dictators. Everybody on earth knows you work with dictators. The further right, the better. We provide a stable economy for your capitalists. I'll continue to do that. Let me have my 30 palaces. Who cares? We have a thriving middle class here in Iraq. Women get to go around without burqas on. Hell, they can put on bikinis if they want to. Please, Mr. President Bill Clinton, enter into a security relationship with us, and I will be a good Middle East dictator and a wonderful partner for U.S. capitalism. Okay? 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 Well, it didn't happen. You know what did happen. In Libya's case, Muammar Gaddafi announced in December 2003, shortly after the invasion of Iraq, that Libya was renouncing all weapons of mass destruction. Libya possessed at the time chemical weapons, ballistic missiles, and a nascent nuclear weapons program. And Gaddafi said, "I'm giving it all up. I'm a good little dictator here in the Middle East, okay? We have a, okay, it's not a thriving middle class, but our women can go in bikinis if they want to, and I really hope they do, but I'm giving it all up. I'm going to be a good dictator. Okay, so I blew up a jetliner over Scotland. All right. You guys shot down an Iranian aircraft and wiped out 230 people. Okay, we're even. Right? Gaddafi invited international inspectors to certify the compliance. No chemical, no ballistic, no nuclear weapons. The U.S. declared that, quote, "This demonstrates that in a world of strong non-proliferation norms, it is never too late to make the decision to become a fully compliant non-proliferation state." That's what the Bush crime family said at the time, and that Libya would be, quote, "amply rewarded." From the perspective of many governments now, Libya is receiving its reward in the form of hundreds of Tomahawk missiles and the likely downfall of a good dictator that agreed to disarm. So that's the message that is going out to little old countries run by dictators who really are not all that ambitious. I just want to corrupt and run my own country. I'll only kill a few. I won't kill as many as Kissinger has had murdered, or Rumsfeld has had murdered, or Bush or Cheney has had murdered. I won't kill that many, or as Netanyahu has had murdered, or I'll keep the number down. Yes, I've got oil. Jesus, I wish I didn't, but I do. What am I going to do? But I won't do any of that stuff. Just don't hurt me. Don't beat up on me, United States of America, okay? Well, there's your answer. We don't like dictators that have oil. Unless they are big buyers of U.S. weapon systems, like the Saudis or the Kuwaitis. And we tolerate it in Bahrain because we have a huge naval base there. But Libya? Gaddafi? I bet you Gaddafi is sitting around tonight at some place, somewhere, maybe a couple of weeks ago, saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. However that translates into Arabic, right? We'll be right back.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. While we are concerned, aren't we, about the six people who were shot by an approaching helicopter gunship in Libya to rescue a downed American pilot in Israel, an Israeli military strike, I believe today, aimed at Palestinian militants, missed its target and killed three children and their uncle, wounded 13 other family members as they played soccer in their backyard in the Gaza Strip. The attack by the Israeli military was in response to repeated rocket fire toward Israel from Gaza. The Israelis admitted that the rocket fire from Gaza was falling in an uninhabited area. There were no people. The Israeli military acknowledged civilians were killed, but said it was aiming at Palestinian militants who had launched seven mortar shells against Israel earlier Tuesday. And again, they exploded in open areas. There were no injuries. The Israeli military said, quote, regrettably, non-combatants were hurt. This hurt. They were murdered. I guess when you're a kid and you're killed by a rocket attack, I guess you're hurt. Maybe you die quickly and you don't feel it, but maybe not. The Gaza Health Ministry said three of the dead and most of the wounded were under the age of 16. He said the fourth family member killed was 50. TV footage released showed flesh on the walls of the house and body parts and shrapnel scattered about. Hamas said Israeli tank fire had hit the house. Hamas threatened to retaliate for the deaths of the people killed in Gaza on Tuesday, today. So, just wipe out children, family. We're playing soccer. Well, you know, stuff happens. If the Gazans don't want to have their families destroyed, their children destroyed, then they should do everything they can to stop Gazan militants from resisting the occupation Oh, well, you know how that goes. Other news from Israel, the former president, Moshe Katsav, who was found guilty of rape and sexual assault, was sentenced to 7 years in jail and ordered to pay compensation to two of his victims. If the Israelis can impanel a jury that will convict a former president, why cannot the United States do the same thing? Oh, I realize that, you know, one is a civil charge. I realize that there are immunity issues here in the United States that apparently do not exist or exist in a different form in Israel. A panel of three Tel Aviv District Court judges handed down the sentence today, 5 years after President Katsav was first accused. Katsav, who is 65, reportedly began sobbing after the verdict was read and then yelled out several times, interrupting the judges, saying it's all lies, the sentence is a mistake, it's not true. He will serve 7 years in prison. He's ordered to pay more than $28,000 to the rape victim and about $7,000 to the sexual assault victim. He'll also serve 2 years on probation after his release from prison. And again, when I saw this story, I thought, you know, the Israelis can do it. They can put a former president on trial for rape and sexual assault. Why can't we put a former president on trial for war crimes, crimes against humanity, violation of the Geneva Accords, violation of Nuremberg verdicts, if you want to call it that, mass murder, mayhem, destruction? And his vice president, Dick, I've got no heart, Cheney. What's the difference between the Israeli system and our system? Israelis are as much warmongers in their little corner of the earth as the United States is all over the globe. So what's the difference here? What's the difference? Why can't Henry Kissinger be put on trial? Why, you know, it's just a mystery, isn't it? We'll be right back.
Saying why did I have to make my ballot a butterfly? I mean, I eat dinner by 4 and yogurt by 10, and there ain't no way that I voted for Buchanan. Now in case they get tangled in a Revo web, no need to sweat, W, you can count on Brother Jeff. Uh-oh, and we better get Mako to fix this. Now leave it up to Thomas, Scalia, and Rehnquist. Got a blank ballot, absentee, you're overseas, Seminole will fill it in, long as you're down with the GOP. And the WB.
Before the hour, and this hour is sponsored once again by Llewellyn from California. She has a message: thanks for everything you do as a truth seeker. I dedicate this sponsorship to the quote lost vision of who I thought Barack Obama was, end quote. Sadly, that person never existed. One example being he never offered any real support for the union people in Wisconsin. He wants to be reelected. It won't happen because the real Obama won't stand up for anything. Before I go back to that story about the former president of Israel, let's listen to what Obama did say back in 2007 when he was a candidate.
That real Americans is standing with working Americans who've seen their jobs disappear and their wages decline and their hope for the future slip further and further away. That's a change we can offer in 2008. When I'm president, I will end the tax giveaways to companies that ship our jobs overseas. I will put money in the pockets of working Americans, of seniors, and homeowners who deserve a break. I won't wait 10 years to raise the minimum wage. I'll raise it to keep pace every single year. And understand this, if American workers are being denied their right
you get the gist of it. Walk that picket line. Well, you had your chance, Mr. President. Couldn't find a pair of comfortable shoes. What happened? Anyway, back to this for just a moment. The former Israeli President Moshe Katsav, found guilty of rape and sexual assault, sentenced to 7 years in jail, ordered to pay compensation when he comes out, 2 years of probation. Raises the question for me why the United States cannot put a former president on trial for mass murder in addition to other charges of violation of international law. But what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said following the sentencing took whatever satisfaction I might have felt in seeing justice at work, even against a former state president. It took that satisfaction and stomped it into the mud, because this is what Netanyahu said, quote, "This is an extraordinary day in the state of Israel. This is a day of sadness and shame, but it's also a day of deep appreciation and pride for the Israeli justice system. The court issued a sharp and unequivocal ruling on a simple principle, that of equality before the law. Nobody is above the law, not even a former president. All are subject to the law. This distinguishes the state of Israel to a very large degree," end quote. So when I read that from Benjamin Netanyahu, whatever satisfaction I received from knowing that the former president was subject to Israeli law, even though our former president is not subject to American law, that was kind of smashed because of the monumental hypocrisy in what Netanyahu said. Israel is not a nation where everyone is equal before the law. Israel is not a nation where nobody is above the law. Israel is not a nation where all are subject to the law. It simply is not. All you have to do is take a look at the illegal settlements. The settlers who defy Israeli law, raise their middle finger to the government, and shoot Palestinians who happen to get in the way. God forbid that a Palestinian responds. Oh, but never mind. Former President Katsav has 45 days to appeal his sentence. What other madness abides tonight? Let's hear from Prairie 2. Oil is, this is Remember the Double Dip. Oil is up again, driven by Wall Street speculators able to sell derivatives to large energy consumers spooked by the turmoil in the Middle East. The strength is being somewhat muted by the widespread economic chaos in Japan. The stock markets have been more or less up on reassurances that everything is fine in Japan. That was put out by the Wall Street Journal, a Murdoch rag. The ink on this episode of Wisdom wasn't yet dry when smoke began roiling from the plutonium-fueled number 3 reactor again, and workers were forced to flee the site. Reports are that they are again pumping water into the ruins of the reactors, but it's not clear how accurate these reports are. Journalists traveling far downwind of the exclusion zone have had their Geiger counters peg the needle. The U.S. Navy has withdrawn the USS George Washington aircraft carrier from its berth 50 miles south of Tokyo out of fear of nuclear contamination. This wasn't something done lightly, as the ship was undergoing reactor maintenance and went to sea under half power. Tokyo, however, can't move, but her people can and continue to stream south. Reassurances of complete safety are offset by measurable radiation in the city's drinking water. U.S. credit card debt was down $67 billion last year, but that was only because banks wrote off $75 billion, meaning total consumer credit card debt was really up $8 billion. This contradicts the constant chant coming from bankers and conservative economists that Americans have become debt adverse. And because of this lack of borrowing, the economy is not recovering. Or, as Mike Malloy would add, what the bankers are saying is a lie. That's not in Prairie News Report. I just put that in. Housing prices fell again last month to the lowest level in 8 years, wiping out a significant amount of middle class wealth. We now have 25% of homeowners underwater, meaning they've lost all their home equity and then some. The corporate spokesman blamed their company's failure to create jobs on a lack of educated Americans to do these jobs. But unemployment among recent U.S. college graduates continues to rise as wages fall. If there really was a shortage of qualified workers, wages would rise sharply for those that are qualified. Instead, they're going down. Energy prices are rising rapidly despite record supplies on hand. Critical parts for manufactured goods that are made in Japan will begin running out in a few weeks, and there have been several shutdowns in the U.S. already. Wages continue falling for educated workers. A Republican agenda to slash public sector wages continues to gain traction. The phrase double-dip recession hasn't been heard in the media lately, but what is coming will require a stronger word to describe it. I think the Japanese word for this is Godzilla. PrairieNumeral2.com. Godzilla. Sheila sent me an email with a link. And she wrote, before you ask, this is not satire. I started to laugh, but burst into tears instead. This kid makes his daddy look sane. He's ghoulishly hilarious, kind of like Pee-wee Herman on crack. Been in office for only 3 months. Now he thinks he has a chance of being elected president. What's she talking about? Senator Rand Paul tests presidential waters from the Louisville Post and Courier. Senator Rand Paul, Republican Kentucky, visited Charleston Monday to talk about his possible presidential bid. Paul, a Tea Party favorite who won his Senate seat last fall, is visiting several early presidential voting states independently of his father. Current U.S. Representative Ron Paul of Texas. Rand Paul said, quote, the only decision I've made is I won't run against my dad. What is it with these people? What is it with their mental functions?
Well, I was elected senator, so I guess I'll become president.
Regarding what Prairie 2 wrote, in Minnesota, the Republican state budget there would cut worker training. This is what it says. The bill proposed by Republican legislators on Monday could cut worker training and shift money out of an economic development program for the Iron Range, Minnesota Public Radio reported. The plan is part of a broader Republican effort to close the state's $5 billion deficit without raising taxes. Well, if the difficulty is in finding trained workers, that's a frequent complaint of employers. So the state of Minnesota, the Republicans, I should say, in Minnesota are going to cut money that would go to worker training. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes Republican sense. You sorry sons of bitches. We'll be right back.
Helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Llewellyn from Brohnert Park, California. She writes, "Thanks for everything you do, Mike. As a truth seeker, I dedicate this sponsorship to the lost vision of who I thought Barack Obama was. Sadly, that person never existed, one example being he never offered any real support for the union people in Wisconsin. He wants to be reelected. It won't happen because the real Obama won't stand up for anything." Llewellyn in Brohnert Park, California. Thanks, Llewellyn. Coming up next hour, at some point, probably in the first half hour, I'm going to play a song for you. The title of it is Open the Door. It's a political song. And it's written and sung by a guy named Shel, S-H-E-L, Rasten, R-A-S-T-E-N. He's lives in Hollywood. And if you want to check out his website and during the break, Shel, S-H-E-L, Rasten, R-A-S-T-E-N.com. And we're going to play it. I listened to it today. I like it. So I'm going to play it, and you can drop me an email and tell me what you think. Bruce writes regarding why the Bush crime family hasn't been prosecuted. Bruce writes, "Mike, our gin league has consumed much pondering the question as to why the Bush crime family has not been prosecuted. Our conclusion is both logical and obvious. The natural guilty verdict would shortly go to the Supreme Court, which would, in a moment, decide that not only was Bush not guilty, but that he was, in fact, still president. Best keep the whole subject out of the hands of our esteemed Supreme Court." Jesus God, he's still president. Okay. Last night, our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy, sent me a story about a couple of American soldiers who were killed Saturday in Kandahar province in Afghanistan by a security contractor. Two soldiers were riddled with small arms weapons. And it turns out here, according to NBC News, a man hired to provide security at a military base in Kandahar province attacked a group of soldiers over the weekend, killing two and wounding four others. The man worked for Tundra Security Group. Must be an American company, right? No, it's an Afghan-owned security company that provides physical security services to local and foreign government organizations throughout Afghanistan. Anyway, this group had been hired March 9 to provide security at Forward Operating Base Frontenac. 10 days later, on Saturday, this guy allegedly walked up to a group of soldiers who were cleaning their weapons and opened fire. Three other U.S. soldiers responded to the gunshots and returned fire and killed the guy, but not before he shot six soldiers. Two of the soldiers were killed. Oh, the original, in the news release, the Department of Defense said the deaths occurred by small arms fire by an individual from a military security group. Now it turns out that it was AK-47. This is, and according to what Sharon wrote to me, you know, what will happen when one of these guys kills an American general? But what is implied here is that these private security forces, not just ours, but theirs, are not being screened, the people that are being hired. They are incompetent. They are killers looking for a way to, the Afghani and the Pakistani ones are looking for ways to kill American soldiers and get us the hell out of their countries. Why the U.S. military or whoever, the U.S. military, why would they hire a private security firm and give them an Afghan security firm and give them access to American service personnel when Afghanis look at the United States military as, rightly so, an invader. I mean, who in the hell is making these decisions, right? I guess the same people who told Barack Obama to go ahead and get involved in yet another attack in the Middle East, or in Africa, anyway, the attack on Gaddafi. I heard something today. Somebody said Obama's getting a bum rap, especially from the left, from people like Dennis Kucinich, for example, or Michael Moore, in that had Obama not joined in this attack and allowed Gaddafi to continue to kill his own people, there would have been a screaming outcry from the left. I obviously don't have a crystal ball that works either way, but I tend to disagree with that. I don't think that that's the case at all. I don't know that people on the left, on the so-called left, what was being asked? I mean, what is Michael Moore or Dennis Kucinich or Mike Malloy or you asking for? Simply that Obama follow the law? On the other hand, why should he? We haven't had a president follow the law where it concerns this sort of stuff since, who? Was it Truman? I mean, did we have a war resolution for Korea? I don't even know. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution was a filthy lie. Stick around. We'll be back after the break, and we're going to do some phone calls. So let me give you the number, 877-996-2556, if you want to chat. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Adventurism.
Welcome back, 7 past the hour. And this hour is sponsored by Mary Lisa. Oh, wait a minute. It says 1 hour sponsored by Anonymous. All right, well, I didn't give her last name. Forget it. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. Damn, we got to change these forms a little bit, Kathy. Anonymous, thank you very much. I'll tell you what, let's just go right to some phone calls here. Sanchez is in East L.A. Hello, Sanchez.
From the depths of the ghetto of East Los Angeles, I wish you as radiation-free a good evening as possible, senor.
Well, thanks.
I was just hearing over on one of the news channels that the levels of radiation, by the way, in Tokyo are up at least 4 times higher than normal.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so it's a situation to be concerned about, but not to go panicky about yet, you know, at least in that area. you know?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to touch on a couple of different things regarding the protest this weekend, but I wanted to ask a question because I've seen a couple of videos posted online, and there's a gentleman, while you're being arrested, is standing right beside you. Is that Daniel Ellsberg? Because I swear to God, he looks like your doppelganger, man.
No, that's Ellsberg, yeah.
Whoa, wow, okay, cool. Wow, he could be your stunt double in a movie or something.
You know? I don't think so. I don't think so, Sanchez. You must have been drinking wine when you looked at that.
No. I was pretty well straight. And one other thing, you were asking about the woman who was being crushed, and that was Colonel Ann Wright.
Oh, I know, yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool. So you got that squared away.
Right.
But regarding now the L.A. protest, there was a bit of civil disobedience that occurred in front of the Grauman's Chinese Theater. As usual, Hollywood ran their parade out here, and it wound through the streets of Hollywood Boulevard and Sunset Boulevard in front of the CNN building, and then again stopped at the Chinese Theater. We've talked about this before, but besides the crowd and the speeches that were being given, there was a notable act of civil disobedience that occurred, and it was the Gold Star Moms. You're familiar with them, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay, so it was members of the Gold Star Moms as well as members of my friends from Military Families Speak Out, including Pat Alviso, but also Cindy Sheehan's sister, Dee Dee Miller, was one of the other people that was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so basically, though, there was no way for the crowd to get at them because there was nearly a double layer of police that were, like, circling around. You know, there was a commotion, a minor one, but there was some people speaking out about it. But there wasn't really anything that anyone could do. But it was they were, you know, calmly taken away. I've got some of that footage on Flip. But the other thing that I wanted to say, I don't know what your feelings are in general after Washington, D.C. and your experiences were, but out here in Los Angeles, I don't know, maybe it's because I've been to too many of these things or mm-hmm. it's just the mood of the country right now, but after the uprisings in Egypt, the way that people are uprising in Wisconsin, you would think here in Los Angeles that sort of would catch on, that there would be that camaraderie that was going on. But we had a minor rain scare, and then there was also this crazy radiation cloud scare. And because of that, we had less than 1,000 people at our protest, which, I don't know, in a county of Los Angeles that has over 10 million people, 1,000 was not quite what I was expecting.
Well,
you know?
I can understand how you would be disappointed in that. But stop and consider that in Washington, D.C., there was less than 1,000.
Oh, my God.
If you look at the video, I think that's pretty obvious. At Guantanamo, or at McQuantico, the next day, the protests for Bradley Manning, there were less than 500. And I think one of the reasons is, as far as I know, the other so-called liberal talkers on radio and television didn't even mention this event, much less show up. There was one other person who did, and that was Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio Network. And Bob and I were like the Bobbsey twins out there. I mean, both of us are Bob's program, of course, is internet. Mine is internet and radio. It doesn't make any difference. We're both doing essentially the same thing. you know, to be out there with absolutely nobody else in this putrid liberal media, such as it is, was just kind of disappointing, especially when some of these radio talk show hosts are based in D.C.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't need to call any names. We know who's who. But I'm just saying, one of the reasons that there is low turnout in Los Angeles, relatively speaking, low turnout in San Francisco, Seattle, D.C., New York, relatively speaking, is because there is not the countrywide or nationwide effort to stop the warmongers. You know, somebody mentioned today about April 20th, 1971, when at least, I don't remember the exact number. There must have been 500,000, maybe 1 million people swarmed into Washington, D.C. to bring the city to a halt in order to resist the war in Vietnam. And
right.
95% of the people who showed up at that were young people. Now, those young people are now, it's 40 years later, people who were 25 at that protest are 65 now. And if you look at the videos from D.C. and I'm sure from L.A. and I'm sure from San Francisco and from Quantico, you see an awful lot of gray-haired people.
Yes.
And Jesus Christ, these are the same people that were out there 40 years ago in Washington, D.C. I know because I was there. So it's astonishing to me that 40 years ago, to stop a war in Vietnam, you could get 1 million people on the streets with no internet, with no, hell, I don't even think we had fax machines. We had,
nope.
We had hand crank mimeograph machines.
I love the smell of that stuff.
And we had telephone calls to each other, but there was no way, nobody thought, of communicating. It was all done through university to university. At the time, I was attending University of North Carolina State, almost said UNC, big mistake, NC State, working with a group called the New MOB Committee to end the war in Vietnam. And the way we got word out was to print handbills and
right.
tack them to telephone poles around around Raleigh, or mail. We would use the mail to send
right.
it to comrades in Madison, Wisconsin, or Brooklyn, New York. So the attitude now, Sanchez, and you know this as well as I do, nobody gives a damn. Nobody cares. I mean, this country is going right into militaristic fascism, and the people who should be resisting, the young people, are not. So, I mean, here we are. If people in their 20s and teens who 40 years ago, people in that age group were the vanguard of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the reasons we had Charlie Rangel on last week, is because one of the reasons they were in the vanguard is because young people knew that their asses were going to go into the meat grinder, too. When you have universal conscription, all of a sudden
exactly.
you get everybody's attention. But that's not what we have now.
No.
So the people who should be leading this movement, it shouldn't be a bunch of goddamn gray-haired people up on the stages in D.C. and L.A. And I mean, we all have something to say, but it should be led by the people who have a future. People my age don't have a future. People in their 20s and 30s do. And I don't get it, Sanchez. I got a break, man. Thanks for checking in.
Okay, man.
All right, take care. Sponsored by Anonymous. He said, I have no opinion about this. Thanks, Anonymous. A couple of quick emails here from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Tundra, the security company I mentioned, whose employee opened fire on American soldiers in Kandahar over the weekend in Afghanistan. Tundra SCA is a sister organization of Tundra Strategies, which is based in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And all its website pages have been taken down. Gee, I wonder why. I bet the investors are American. Dave in L.A. writes, regarding the draft, Mike, as you well know, I just have to vent. There is very little of an anti-war movement in this country because there is no military draft. The vast majority of American people do not have a personal stake in our military aggression. And, of course, the corporate media do not report anything about protests or dissent. We must reinstate the military draft in this country. Then the military adventurism will finally stop. Dave in L.A. Hey, have you got that song ready, that tune written and recorded by Shel Raston? You got ready? I want to play this. It's entitled Open the Door. It's a political song, and it's published by New Movement Press. Shel is a singer-songwriter based in Hollywood. Listens to the program there. Go ahead and play it.
Hello, boys and girls. I'm here to talk to you today about what it means to be a real American. You see, there's this piece of paper. It's called the Constitution. Well, forget about it. It's real old and doesn't really matter in our current political climate. So the thing you all got to remember is just to do whatever the government tells you. Because they love you. They know what's best for you. Okay? Open the door when they come and knock it. Open the door when they come for you. Don't you wanna be a good boy? Don't you wanna do what they want you to? So go with the spot when they come for you. Give me a kick when they ask you to. It's the American.
I like that song. Open the Door. I mean, you know, like, but I like it. I like it. It's by a singer-songwriter named Shel, S-H-E-L, Raston, R-A-S-T-E-N. Go to his website. You might be able to download it for free. I don't know. ShelRaston.com. That's a good one. All right. We have a break coming up here. When we come back, back to your phone calls. We have one open line. The number is 877-996-2556 if you want to jump in here and join us. Stay with us. Play it again. Here we go.
Yee! Get up and dance. Open the door!
Give me your kids.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Twenty-five before the hour. Where were we? Phone calls. And Nora is in Minneapolis. Welcome to the program, Nora.
Hey, thanks, Mike. I heard some really good news tonight that I wanted to share. I'm really happy. I'm really happy about our president, Barack Obama, is going to visit the tomb of Archbishop Oscar Romero in El Salvador. And so now all the news media is hopefully will have to talk about the story of Archbishop Oscar Romero and the problem in El Salvador.
I don't think so. You would think they would have to talk about it, but...
Well, some will. The NPR probably will.
Ooh, you think?
There, that's where I heard about it.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if Mr. Obama will bring up the mass murder in El Salvador and Guatemala and, well, all of Central America, really, that went on and on and on, and how so many people who now work in deep in the bowels of government where you can't really see them anymore, who were intimately involved in setting up the slaughter in Central America. I wonder if Obama will talk about that. I bet he won't.
We have to hope for a good questioner journalist at his press conference.
Well, maybe somebody from the Spanish-speaking press might say something, but Obama knows how to answer things that are non-answers. Obama is an expert at that. And trust me, Nora, I'll be interested to see, just like you are.
But would he go to that place if that's what he wanted, was not to talk about it?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, let's see what happens.
Have you heard about Michio Kaku, what he says about that fuck you, Shima? Or did I mispronounce that again? The nuclear plant?
He says
that what they're doing, trying to spray water, is trying to squirt a squirt gun on a wildfire. And they need to pour in sand and cover it with concrete. I mean, if you think about the future plan, what are they going to do for 250,000 years? Sit there and spray the plutonium with water?
Well,
I don't think so.
Well, no. They're attempting to cool the temperature down so that they can resubmerge those rods. The reactor now is ruined because they put seawater in there. What they're trying to do is just stop the continual rising of temperature, and once they get that under control, then they can begin doing exactly what you're talking about. They're going to have to entomb it. It's over until the next earthquake hits, in which case it'll all be ruptured, and the end of the world as we know it will occur. Hey, Nora, I got to move on. Thank you. I appreciate. I didn't know he was going to El Salvador. Thanks for letting us know. Take care, Nora. I'm not real clear on what they're going to do with the Fukushima plant or whatever it's called. That's where it's located. I don't think that's it. Daiichi, I think, is the name of it. But as far as I know, there's nothing they can do. I also read something today. Where did I read it? New York Times science section? I don't know. I forget. But it's talking about this quake that caused all this was so enormous in fracturing that part of the Pacific plate or whatever the hell. There are two plates that are crushing up against each other. And the one that is part of the country of Japan is now been placed at such an angle that the next quake is going to fracture Japan, just break it. Now, that's being a little bit too literal, but the danger right now for the entire nation of Japan and everything that that country's people are involved in is off the charts. It's just, and this is something, of course, that is not being talked about a lot, I guess. Just like I saw on some news report today, it may have been online, it may have been one of the networks, but in the Mississippi Gulf area around Louisiana. Oil all over the place. It's there's oil sheen, there's oil slicks, there's oil appearing all over the Louisiana coast. There was a report today, an interview in Science Times, in the New York Times, the woman from the University of Georgia who conducted the academic research on the effects of the BP spill. She says now that the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico is a graveyard, covered in a thick goo that is excrement from the bacteria that attempted to eat all that oil, all that hydrocarbon. And as the bacteria consumed it and then excreted whatever they didn't, these little creatures didn't what, digest? Is that right? It's now on the bottom of the ocean, bottom of the Gulf of Mexico, and it's created a dead zone that stretches for mile upon mile upon mile. And it's her feeling, this environmental PhD from, or whatever she is, it's probably not environmental science, oceanography, ocean science. I'm drawing a blank on her name, damn it. She's right here from the University of Georgia. But the interview with her in the Times made it very clear that as a scientist, she says that the Gulf of Mexico is essentially dead. Now, I'm putting words in her mouth, but that's essentially what she is saying. And then, coincidentally or not, you know, I read that this morning, and then this evening on, I guess it was one of the network news newscasts, I see this report that oil now is once again, they've got the booms out, they've got oil slicks, they've got the sheen on the surface. Nobody knows where it's coming from. Nobody's saying anything. There are no fires on the horizon. There are no explosions that have been reported. And the fishing industry and the tourist industry and whatever industry, the crabbing and the oyster and the shrimp industry in Louisiana now all of a sudden once again is, oh my God. So, well, Blue is calling in from Seoul, South Korea. Hello, Blue.
Hey, good day, Mike.
Good day.
I'm sorry I missed you, but I'm happy that after 3 weeks of lying flat on my back, with two surgeries and feeling bloody useless, I'm going to be going home on Friday.
Well, good for you.
Taking my leg with me, fortunately.
Oh, good. It was apparently it was a lot more serious than you thought.
Well, it was. I knew it was serious when I got off the plane in Seoul because I didn't quite know where I was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But it's probably partly my own fault. The thing wasn't treated properly in Poland to begin with, but I probably aggravated the situation by going down to Madison from Winnipeg, which I shouldn't have done, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
But I thought...
We certainly missed you in Washington and Quantico.
Well, I've got to say this, Mike. Your name is Gladiator, and that's as close to an impression of Russell Crowe as I'm going to get, I'm afraid. But, I have to congratulate you and Ellsberg and Kurt Fink and the rest of the people who were there standing up to those fascist bastards. You know, the people who arrested you and who were pushing you around there, I mean, these people are just like the bastards who herded the people off the trains at Auschwitz and into the ovens. And most of these bastards would happily rape their own children and shoot their own mothers if they were ordered to, and most of them wouldn't need orders to do it.
Wow.
I mean, it's infuriating. Now, I've got to tell you, one of the reasons I called, the main reason I called, the guy who's sharing the room with me here is a retired sergeant major in the Army, the American Army.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent 30 years, and he retired, and he'd spent a lot of that time in Korea. He'd learned the language, and he likes it here, so he decided to stay. And he's completely opposed to the wars. And he's got a kid who's in the Army as well, and he's trying to talk the kid out of getting out of the Army. But he and I decided to do a media watch to find out if the American media were talking at all about what was happening in D.C. or the other cities or in Virginia there.
You're kidding.
No, we decided to do that. We've got computers.
That's a waste of time.
Mike, there wasn't a single mention of the anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. Not one single mention.
No.
And not a single word about the demonstrations. Not one word. Not on any of the progressive stations.
The only place I saw it about the... I was in D.C., and that night turned on local television. There was a 10-second announcement that there had been a protest, an anti-war protest in Washington, D.C., and on, I believe it was Monday, in the New York Times or the Washington Post, not the New York Times, the Washington Post, there was a brief article about 32 people were arrested outside the Marine base at Quantico. And that's it. Even the local television stations had nothing to say about it. The idea that the press has First Amendment constitutional protection and treats these stories like this means it should be withdrawn from them, in my opinion. We'll be right back.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
Ten before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Anonymous. Back to Blue. All right, where were we?
Well, I was telling you that... first of all, a side note that most of the physicians that were attending us originally, this other bloke came in about 12 days ago, and we both got similar injuries. His right leg is completely shattered, and my left one was shattered. So we were attended by the same physician, and all of those people have gone to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there were five doctors in this hospital alone, and you know, Seoul is a huge city. There are a lot of hospitals here. Was a specialist in nuclear medicine, and all those folks have gone to Japan, which is quite interesting in view of the history between the two countries. And there's no love lost between them. But I was going to say the worst thing that's happened to me here in the last 3 weeks, as I say, lying flat on my back, essentially, I haven't had a glass of wine, Mike. I haven't had a single glass of wine in all 3 weeks.
Is that good or bad?
Well, what do you think, mate?
Well, I don't know. Is that good?
Well, it's deprivation. It's torture. It's like waterboarding, mate. I mean, well, for somebody who loves wine, to spend 3 weeks in a hospital and haven't a single... However, the guy that's here with me, his friends bought him a fifth of Jack Daniels the other day.
Yeah, poison.
And poison? Well, it's wonderful stuff, really. I mean, if you can't get red wine, you might as well drink Jack Daniels.
Well, Jack Daniels, but, you know, when I do drink, it's Jack Daniels that is poison. But now, wait a second. If you had such an treacherous sense of missing your wine, maybe that's your body telling you something, Blue. What do you think?
I'm not sure, Mike. I've got to have wine, so I'm going to be very glad to get back to Australia where there's plenty of red wine.
You've got to have it?
Well, now, let's not go down this road, Mike.
I'm very curious.
I love my red wine. I'm devoted to red wine.
I love my dog, but, you know, I'm just saying
you've got your bloody dog. I've got my red wine.
but now, wait a second, Blue. This could be very serious. I mean, have you considered the fact that maybe the red wine needs you?
Well, that's possible, and I'm happy to contribute. And
Okay, well, moving right along. Go ahead.
I wanted to tell you that I personally monitored National Public Radio for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
in the middle of the night the other day.
Yeah.
I think we got the difference in time right. This was during the time that you and the others were supposed to be out in front of the White House there.
Right.
So we split this up. My friend Jack was monitoring something else, and I was monitoring public radio. And for 2.5 hours, Mike, there wasn't a single mention of either the anniversary of Iraq or the demonstrations. They talked about baseball. They talked about some fool who'd written a rap version of Sound of Music, if you can believe that.
But wait a second, Blue, you were surprised. Somebody sent me an email and said WNBC, the NBC flagship station in New York, had a 4-second coverage. I mean, literally, where the anchor said several thousand or several hundred people gathered in Times Square, New York today in protest of the 8th anniversary of the war in Iraq. Moving on to sports. You know, that sort of thing. But you see, we in this country are not surprised by this. It's expected. We don't have a free and independent media in this country anymore. That is the national media. We still have it, but it's subterranean or it's on the Internet. You have to go to the Internet. You have to go to some.
Or it's the Mike Malloy show.
Well, this is just one little tiny chunk. But, I mean, you do have to go. There are all sorts of independent news sites that gather these videos. I'll tell you what, if you want to see some coverage of what happened, go to YouTube and YouTube.com and just type in March 19th, March 20th demonstrations, and you will have literally scores of videos, none of which you will find on so-called mainstream media. But that's what you have to...
By the way, I want to interject... I disagree vehemently about the draft. I think the worst possible thing to do to discourage war is to prepare for it. In other words, as Einstein, I think it was, he said, you can't simultaneously right. prepare for war and peace. I think that it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of.
Well, no. I'll tell you why it's not. Because instituting the draft, while it is the initial step in bringing in hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people into the military, it also democratizes the whole idea of your ass is going to die for corporate America. And
but
once
they will go willingly, as they've done before so many times.
I don't think so. The factor
they did in Vietnam.
Well, they didn't in Vietnam. We had
enough of them did so that they had plenty of bodies on the ground.
Well,
there
until the people in this country understood what the attack on Vietnam really was all about. Once we understood it, and once people knew, and it took a while. You've got to realize it was 1964. Nobody was thinking any place on earth, much less in the United States. But once it became clear as to what was going on and the fact that every single person except the wealthy who could buy their way out, as they did, as they have done in so many wars, that everyone was going to have a rifle put in their hands and given 6 weeks of basic training and sent over to attack people, Asian people that had done nothing to us, once that became clear, then the hundreds of thousands took to the streets. And I disagree with you on that one, pal. That's what we need. We need universal draft. We need every single male and female, when they reach age 18, at this time, women too, to understand you're going to die for corporate America unless you refuse to serve. Blue, I got to leave it there. I hope you get well. Call me when you can. I hope you repair well. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back at a 7 past the hour. This hour sponsored by Dennis Black. His message, happy birthday, Darcy, from Casey, Melody, Mom, Dad, and Roxanne. Happy birthday, Darcy, from Casey, Melody, Mom, Dad, and Roxanne. That's from Dennis Black. Thanks, Dennis. Dennis Black is the sponsor of this hour, and we appreciate it. Before we go back to your calls, just hang with me a second here. We have an open line if you wanted to get in here. We're doing something I normally don't do, taking phone calls for 2 hours. 877-996-2556. Robert in Minnesota, I guess Minneapolis, or St. Paul. I'm not sure, Robert, sorry. Sent this it's a letter to Amy. How do you pronounce the senator there? Klobuchar? 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 I guess it's Klobuchar. This is a letter he sent today in response to Senator Klobuchar asking for donations. Amy, I've been a supporter of yours, and push come to shove, I'll still support a Democrat over a Republican most times. That is obviously not a ringing endorsement. That's because yours, Obama's, and other Democrats' talk about compromise does not ring true. I know. We don't understand what it's like. Well, I do understand that in a compromise, both sides end up somewhere in the middle with an outcome which is at least satisfactory to each. Your compromises are more like, okay, gee whiz, will you stop saying harsh things about us if we give in? I suppose you couldn't claim some victory even in that if they stop saying harsh things. Of course, they don't. I would love to teach you, Barack, and virtually all of the other Democrats just a little seminar on countering dirty tricks in a negotiation. Number one, if you give in to the first dirty trick, they know you are a sucker and they'll keep taking advantage. Number two, when you recognize a dirty trick, i.e. blatantly lying to the press, you bring it up, name it, and affirm that the negotiations will cease if they continue unethical tactics. Number three, walk out. And that may be a very good time to use the bully pulpit you have to explain loud, long, and clearly that the opposition is, well, lying. Saying our honorable colleague is mistaken or expresses a different point of view is not true. They are not honorable, and they are lying. That's the correct word. How can you, Obama, and other so-called hands across the aisle politicians not know what probably 70% of Americans know at some level? Compromise or capitulation will not mean victory in 2012, nor in any decisions leading up to 2012. Obama, and perhaps you, want to know how to energize the base? Show up some weekend soon for 11 a.m. rally in Madison, or a 2 p.m. rally in Detroit, or a 5 p.m. rally in Indianapolis on the way back to D.C. When you folks are at those rallies, tell the goddamn truth. Name the lies, the demons, and the anti-American activities of the Republicans that will rally both your base and the independents. Do you really not listen to Rachel Maddow, Tom Hartman, Mike Malloy, etc.? I know that Malloy doesn't talk nice. That's because he struggles, as your base does, to find words strong enough to describe the vile people you compromise with. Have you bought the Fox News commentary that the liberal broadcasters are the kooks? No, Amy, they are in fact the truth tellers, and they are largely speaking for the majority of Americans. Let me suggest a quiet couple of hours next time you're in Minnesota with Ellen Roberts and Nancy Carlson and Mac McNeil. Then you will know how your constituents feel and what we want from you. Because, Amy, we need incredible guts from you right now, not after the next election. So, donations to help you fight the good fight? Not until you fight the good fight. I want to think you have not been bought by the opposition. From the premise that your ethics are intact, please stop running from the playground bullies. Sincerely, Robert, and his last name and his address in Minnesota. I think anyone who has a Democratic senator or a Democratic representative would send a similar letter if approached with a pitch for contributions. I guess there's a couple of exceptions to that, but not many. Lobo is in Chicago, listening online. Hey, Lobo.
Hey, Mike. It was great to see you on Saturday.
Oh, is this Lobo, the Veterans for Peace, Lobo?
Absolutely.
How you doing? How are you? Good to see, good to talk with you again.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you looking at me? Good to see you.
Well, I've got a special camera here. You were part of the detail that was around Nader, weren't you?
Well, you know, we don't have that many people, so I was the detail around Nader.
That was you, okay.
Yeah, I was afraid you might leave. I didn't know you were going to be on the march and on the fence.
Oh, yeah.
That was beautiful. We really appreciate that. And, yeah, I'm with the VFP action group that organized that. And I'm sorry, I was with Zach Choate back behind the stage when you spoke over in Quantico, so I didn't get to hear you too much. I'm catching up on a lot of stuff on video here.
Well, there's there's a lot of video out there, and you know, you thank me. I'm glad that Veterans for Peace, Mike Ferner, among others, you know, made the offer for me to participate. You know, I've got this little 25-cent radio program, Lobo, and you know, it was an honor for me to be around you guys to hang out with people who. Like you, and there were a couple of guys up on that fence with me. They were very young. I don't know their names, but you talk about intensity. These are guys in their 20s, and they have seen something that very few Americans will see, and they have come back and made a decision. And out of Quantico, I watched a guy who was in his army greens, and he stood there on the stage. I don't know. Were you at Quantico?
Yeah, that was Zach Choate. Yeah, I was talking to him afterwards.
The guy that pulled his battle ribbons off.
That's right. Zachary Choate.
Oh, my God. You know, I'm not ashamed to admit, when he did that, I stood there with tears coming out of my eyes. That kid freaked me out. I mean, to have gone, and he was so scared and so nervous to be up on that stage and to make a move like that with that horrible Nazi armament not 300 yards behind him. I mean, Jesus, God, that was, of both events, that was the one thing that just absolutely freaked me out, Lobo.
Well, we deal with this all the time. He wasn't scared. He got choked up because it's very emotional.
Yeah.
And these kids, you know, for me, you know, I've been a cop for 27 years now, and I've been out of service a lot longer than that. But these, and some of the Vietnam war people I know, and I went in after Vietnam, but I'm still with the Vietnam Vets Against
right.
War and the Veterans for Peace. But the thing is, like I said, like you're talking, these kids are raw, fresh out.
Yeah.
And some people, 30, 40 years, Jay Wank went up to the, or tried to go to the memorial. He was wearing the VFP Garrison envelope hat, with his tan uniform shirt on, blue jeans.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the six people with the flowers. Jay Wank is from World War II, and some of these guys still don't talk about their own experiences. So when a kid comes out 3, 4 years, 2 years after they've been there and try to verbalize this stuff, that takes a lot of guts.
It does. Hey, Lobo, hold on a minute. Hold on. Let me do some commercials and we'll come back. This is the Malloy Program. Stay with us. Like a plane. Nobody knew from time to time if the plans were changed. Oh, oh, oh. If the plans were changed. Change. You can run out your rules, but you
practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking with Lobo in Chicago, who is a member of Vietnam Veterans, or Veterans for Peace, and was at one of the people at the rally on Saturday in D.C. Where were we?
Oh, well, we were,
you were telling me about Zach.
The young guy,
I swear to God, he can't be more than 22, 23, 24, about the same age as Bradley Manning. And I know he wasn't scared, he was overcome up on that stage.
It's just raw emotion. People just don't understand what these kids have been through. And in the American Indian Movement in the early 70s in Chicago, I got beat on and arrested plenty. And so I, on December 16th, at the White House fence, and then again this last Saturday, I was the last one to leave after the third warning. I'm the one that was collecting the signs and then handing them to people and making sure they didn't have anything on them they didn't want to take to jail. So far, the last few times, I don't get arrested, but for Mike Ferner, and who's the president, national president, Veterans for Peace, and everybody else, again, I really appreciate you coming out there and standing tall on the wall. That was a beautiful thing. We need people like you. We don't have many people like you around.
Well,
anymore.
I just wish that people who claim to be all about progressive movements and all about anti-war and all about veterans' benefits and all about democratic principles and all about rule of law, who are in the so-called liberal media, I wish that just once I could see them all show up, and not just show up, but they've got these big ass platforms, Lobo, where they can talk on television, they can talk on radio, and when they get out and about, people recognize them because they are on television and they are they do have fame of a sort, you know what I'm talking about, and notoriety or whatever, and to listen to the silence, is just it starts to get to me for after a while. I'm not a joiner at all. A lot of people have, they'll say things to me, well, what about all your friends in talk radio? And I've said before, I don't have friends in talk radio. You know, I'm just out here doing my thing, Kathy and me, and we don't have conversations with other people in talk radio or talk television. I just wish the hell that some of the talk was backed up with some action. That's all I'm saying. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm just sorry. I want to let your viewers or your listeners and all, anybody who's looking at this videotape, to let you guys know that Colonel Ann Wright, 29 years, retired U.S. Army in the Diplomatic Corps for 15 years. While they did, I'm so sorry, I left the area. There was less than 50 protesters there. There was still over 200 cops there. And out of the less than 50, almost all, 33 or 36 got arrested.
Right.
But then they moved in on over Ann and shoved in and pressed her up against one of the orange construction barrel or roadside barrels there. And but she's doing all right. I was worried about that. I was not happy when I heard about that.
No, nobody was happy about that. I mean, the nerve, the absolute disrespect, it's not nerve, the disrespect, the contempt that the Virginia State Police Riot Squad, in all their armor and their shields and their protective gear and their helmets and their automatic weapons and their truncheons and their tear gas and their pepper spray, McRae, and there's Ann Wright and a bunch of other people sitting down there with not a damn thing on, nothing, just their clothes, no protection, no nothing, and to be treated like that. I mean, that's the kind of stuff, Lobo, and you know, and I know, and everybody knows, that's the kind of stuff that can, on the wrong day at the wrong time, can cause us to go over the line. You know, these state troopers and these militarized law enforcement agencies, we're told, you know, don't touch him. Don't even touch him. If you just touch him, you can be charged with assaulting an officer. And yet they can just walk over a woman like Ann Wright, who has done more for this country than 30 of those sons of bitches will do their entire lives. And I hate that. Hey, Lobo, I got to leave it there, man. I hope you call in again. Thanks for checking in.
She's doing okay. She's not hurt too bad. Okay, thanks.
All right, nice meeting you in D.C. We'll meet up again, I promise.
Go to Madison. I've been there a couple times for a few days. Go to Madison, Wisconsin. I'll meet you there. And then we got to go to Lansing and then Columbus and Indianapolis.
All right,
go to Madison, brother.
All right. Thanks, Lobo. Take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malone. Sponsored by Dennis Black. He has a message. Happy birthday, Darcy. From Casey, Melody, Mom, Dad, and Roxanne. And then he adds, Mike is the man. Oh, that's sweet. But happy birthday, Darcy, from Casey, Melody, Mom, Dad, and Roxanne. Dennis Black is our sponsor this hour. Thanks, Dennis. Captain Mary in Memphis, who sends me a lot of stuff that is very interesting and always brief, which I really like. She sent me something here. It's a quote. Doesn't know where it comes from, but she thought she'd share it. Here's the quote. Fairy tales weren't written to tell children that dragons exist. Children know that dragons exist. Fairy tales were written to tell children that dragons can be killed. I like that. I like that. Thanks, Captain Mary. Captain Mary in Memphis. Fairy tales weren't written to tell children that dragons exist. Children know that dragons exist. Fairy tales were written to tell children that dragons can be killed. Boy, that's going to stick in my head for a while. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. Good to hear your voice on the radio after the weekend. That was interesting, what Captain Mary had.
Yeah.
I'll have to chew on that one a while.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I've got grown kids, but I have a 6.5-year-old, too, who insists on reading and her own now and having me make up fairy tales, but I like that. That's a good one.
Yeah. Just briefly, regarding Prairie 2's missive for the evening about Godzilla.
Yeah.
the immediate image just popped into my brain of Godzilla walking down that main street with skyscrapers of the day on either side and stepping on buses and cars, et cetera, and people running. And then, beware the tail. Then the tail came through and just wiped out buildings.
Yeah.
Like the second dip.
Well, you know what is interesting? In this country, in the United States, back in the 50s, when we had all the invaders from space movies, somebody who understood what was going on explained to me one time that those invader from space movies were designed to prepare Americans psychologically for the possibility of an invasion from the Soviet Union. And by the same token, in Japan, I've been told, after we dropped nuclear weapons on them and killed hundreds of thousands of people, the apocryphal monsters that Godzilla or whatever they were who roamed the streets of Japan in those movies from the 60s and 70s were the collective consciousness of the Japanese people that were trying to process the monster that had been dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So the parallels between the Godzilla movies in Japan and the Space Invaders movies in the United States, the parallels, I think, are very interesting. The parallels and the differences. They both involved monsters that the two countries were terrified that might happen to them. In the case of Japan, happened to them again.
Yeah. Well, and let's not forget the movie about the Arizona desert, them.
Oh my God! The ants
with the ants.
And they got into the sewer system in L.A. Do you remember that?
Right.
Oh my God!
Nuclear testing.
Yeah,
right.
those were the result of nuclear radiation exposure. So
right.
we had those in this country too.
Yep.
But the horror that's occurring in Japan right now, I mean, I can't.
Yeah.
It's just astonishing to me. You know, if we go back just a couple of weeks, Japan, this orderly, and I mean that in the best sense, vigorous society, even though they have dealt with maybe a decade and a half of this financial ennui or doldrums, I've not been there, but the pictures I've seen, this beautiful country, everything just so, I don't know how to describe it. A Japanese person could describe it a lot better than I could. But
right.
And now it's been smashed just absolutely as if as if a monster had swung its tail across the landscape and just smashed. I understand that the village that was hardest hit from the tidal wave was this beautiful, picturesque, flower-laden, in the spring, village, a seacoast fishing village. And the tidal wave that came in has just destroyed it. And everything about the country now, even the areas that were not hit by this directly, even the areas that still remain that aren't showing amounts of radioactivity, can you imagine something like that happening on scale in the United States? I don't know that we would ever recover. I don't know what the Japanese are going to do. I don't know.
As a matter of fact, I and many others here in South Central Texas can and did imagine such a panic to address Sanchez's ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 70s, when the South Texas nuclear project was being considered and again, and, you know, eventually built.
Mm-hmm.
Around here, for people who understood,
right.
That's when the panic really started, but to no avail. And along this part of the Texas area, for 150, 200 miles inland from the Gulf,
mm-hmm.
our prevailing winds are from the southeast, off the Gulf of Mexico. And the South Texas Nuclear Project is built about 70 or 80 miles just inside the coast, to our southeast. So no, we weren't too pleased about that. And the problems. This is going to be a story for years for Japan because I fear the worst about their drinking water, their groundwater, their aquifers.
Mm-hmm.
With that being irradiated, there's nowhere to run.
No, there isn't.
Where are they going to evac 60 to 80 million people? I don't know how many people in Japan, but...
Well, I watched this thing tonight, Governor Cuomo of New York, talking about, you know, this Yankee nuclear reactor that just had his license renewed. And he made the very obvious point that most of us know, a 50-mile evacuation zone or a 50-mile zone around that reactor that is in horrible shape and may fall apart tomorrow would include something like 30 million people, including all of New York City. Where in the hell are people like that going? An evacuation is impossible. It can't be done any more than it can be done in Japan. And to continue with this nuclear madness is just that, madness. This is insane.
Nowhere to run.
No, there is. There is nowhere to run. You cannot outrun nuclear radiation. You just can't do it. There's no place to hide. Unless you want to go live underground. What was that novel? Oh, well, I'm going to get lost here. But there is no place to go. There is no place to go. And for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to have renewed the license on a nuclear plant that has already double its... It doubled its expected lifetime and mm-hmm. to renew it again. What the hell is it going to take? Is it going to take an accident on the West Coast, on the East Coast, here in Georgia? Is it going to take a nuclear accident for people to find, on this country, for people to realize? Jesus,
we
God.
We almost lost Detroit.
It just drives me.
1966.
Yeah, exactly. It just drives me crazy. Steve, thanks for checking in.
You bet.
All right, take care. Nuclear power, yeah. Peaceful use of the atom. That's what I was told when I was in elementary school. At the same time, we were doing duck and cover routines, exercises. Duck and cover. But the peaceful use of the atom. We're going to have these nuclear generating plants, and they're going to make electricity. And it's going to be great, kids! It's gonna be wonderful! Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Dennis Black. who has a message. Happy birthday, Darcy, from Casey, Melody, Mom, Dad, and Roxanne. And me. Happy birthday, Darcy. Yeah, we'll join in that, right, Kathy? Happy birthday, Darcy. Bob writes, Mike, I just signed up for the third year of your podcast subscription. You may want to remind people that this is about the time of year when you began doing subscriptions. And some information may have to be updated for the account to renew. Some of my information was blank. It happens. No, this isn't a shameless plug. Keep it lit and stay out of jail for a few days. Bob. Thanks, Bob. It is a plug, and it's a damn good one. If you have not subscribed to Molloy Podcasts, it'll cost you $54.60. Or is it $56.40? One of the two. Either $56.40 or $54.60. I don't know. But it works out to 25 cents a program for this two-bit radio show. So, the best way to help us stay on the air is to subscribe. And you get a year's worth of podcasts of this program in your email every morning. And you can put it any place you want to put it. Download it to your wristwatch, whatever you want to do. But it's there, commercial free. And, you know, probably some mornings there may not be one there because the recording screwed up the night before, or you may get a repeat because we did a rebroadcast. But for the most part, you know, for 25 cents, what the hell are you bitching about, you know? 25 cent radio program. but do subscribe, okay? We need you to do that. Dave in L.A. writes, Mike, I noticed some reports starting to pop up about a Gulf oil slick starting a few days ago. I wonder if the Captain Seal Deepwater Horizon is no longer Captain Sealed. By the way, the U.S. government, the Department of Interior, just approved another deepwater offshore platform in the Gulf yesterday. I believe it is for Shell Oil. Dave in L.A. We just don't learn, do we? We just don't learn. We continue to allow the predators to run the country, to put us all at risk, the predators in how many different parts of the energy industry? The nuclear power industry, the coal industry, the oil industry, the natural gas industry. Does anybody think that they really have the best interests of the American people at heart? Come on, get serious. You know, series of, what do you call them? Let's just call them ads because I can't think of the right word. Institutional ads, I guess. But the coal and oil industry, I guess a consortium of all of them. But it's that series of commercials where the very, very skinny woman, all dressed in black, you know what I'm talking about. She's, you know, probably in her 40s, maybe a little bit older. She comes out and tells you with that, she's got a look on her face. I think she is the bride of that creature that represents death. You know, the one with the scythe in his hands and the hood over his face. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen those commercials, right, Kathy? Fairly attractive 50-something or 40-something woman who comes out in the black pantsuit and tells you about, well, you know, people talk about how the oil industry, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what we can do now? See all this graphic I'm going to show you? We send all these tubes down into the earth, and this one over here, it's all from one platform, one drilling station. All these tubes, this tube goes over here to get oil. This one goes over here to get natural gas. Boom. This one goes over here to, and they've been running these institutional ads for, I don't know. I've seen the same woman doing these same commercials for what, a year and a half? I guess they stopped them during the Gulf, you know, explosion, the BP explosion in the Gulf. But every time I see her come out, I get on television, she comes out from behind something, you know, and everything is white. What?
You have two new colors.
Everything is white on the screen, and she's dressed in a black pantsuit, and I just, you know, it looks like the bride of death. She does. David is in Santa Clarita, California. And David, guess what? We're down to about a minute. I'm sorry.
Oh, hi. Am I on the air?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, this is a little of a personal story. I was a very hardcore conservative just until 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And because of this show, I think you were like a sledgehammer in my head.
Oh, yeah?
And, yeah, something like that. I mean, Tom Hartman right now is filling all the cracks with a lot of knowledge, but I really needed that hit on the head to really feel. I really, really hated you, like, so much that I wanted to write you, like, really hate letters and stuff. I never did, but it's funny to me. But I was just projecting my self-hatred, I guess.
Well, that David, I'd like to hear more, but we're flat out of time. Maybe you can call back in. That's an interesting story. I'm sorry to have been a sledgehammer, but I appreciate you checking in. We have to leave it there for tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. IRS.